So I guess we can go ahead and get started then. Our first speaker will be Jason DeCoff. He'll be talking about the effects of winter canola, the planting date and variety on yield and meal quality for biodiesel production. All right, good afternoon. So I'm going to be talking about some preliminary data that we've gotten from kind of an offshoot of two other projects that I've been working on. The first one is the National Winter Canola Variety Trial. We began working in this trial last year, and we're also participating this year. And essentially what we're doing, obviously, is looking at about 40 different varieties of winter canola and identifying which ones are going to perform best in our area of the U.S., which is Tennessee. The second project is this mobile biodiesel lab. So we got funding from the USDA to basically create this mobile demonstration where we would take it around to different farmers to talk to them about the feasibility of producing their own biodiesel on the farm. And so within the demonstration, we've got two pieces of equipment that help to relay that information. The one that you see on the left-hand side is our seed press, so that's taking the canola and it's extracting the oil from it. And then the biodiesel processor, which is on the right-hand side, is basically taking that oil and allowing us to convert it into biodiesel. So we're talking to farmers about this in our area in Tennessee because a lot of our cropland has pretty highly erosive soils. And currently a lot of the farmers are leaving their fields fallow in the wintertime. So being able to get some sort of cover on those areas is going to be good. And also, you know, having some sort of an incentive for farmers where, you know, they could also produce, you know, fuel, they could also sell this as a commodity on the market for canola oil. So we want to talk to farmers about this. And as far as the footprint goes, we've calculated about 5% of farm acreage could be devoted to growing some of these biodiesel feedstocks. And that would be enough to produce enough biodiesel to power all of the equipment on their farm for the entire year. So it's a relatively small footprint. And so what we're looking at now, well, from that project, we obviously did some economic analyses to see, okay, how much does it cost for a farmer to produce biodiesel on the farm? And so what we saw, so this includes the cost of the feedstock production, the cost of the actual biodiesel production. So we're looking at about $6 a gallon. Okay, so this economically isn't really feasible for a farmer to do either with today's prices or last year's prices. It's still way too high. But the one thing that's nice is that we've got that seed press there. So with the seed press, we're not only creating or extracting the oil, but everything that's left over is the meal component. And so similar to like a soybean meal, this has a value to it. You can look up on the USDA website and you can find the going rate for soybean, canola, sunflower, cottonseed meal, all different types. And they usually range about $200 to $300 a ton. And so we can calculate based on the work that we've done for a gallon of biodiesel that's produced, we know how much meal is also being produced and associate a price with that. And so when we do, we end up with about $3 per gallon of biodiesel that's produced. So that brings that cost a lot lower. And then there's other things. There are some government grants that can pay for part of the equipment costs. It also can be shared by more than one user, so that brings down the cost a lot as well. But the main thing, the main driving force to make this economically feasible for a farmer is really that meal component, being able to produce a high-quality meal. And so with the National Winter Canola Variety Trial that we're a part of, you know, the main point is to identify the overall grain yields and oil yields of the winter canola, but we're using it to look at the meal quality as well, because we think that's an important component that, like I said, is going to create more of an incentive to producing, to allowing farmers to produce their own biodiesel on the farm. So we've done like I said, last year we participated in the winter canola variety trial. We had about 40 different varieties in a randomized complete block design with four replicates. We looked at three different planting dates, and then we harvested once they had become mature in June. And then we looked at a number of different things, both in the field and in the laboratory. We obviously measured yield of the individual plots. We looked at winter loss. Since this is a cool season crop, we wanted to identify, you know, how many plants were lost over that period of time. We looked at seed moisture content at harvest. We also looked at photosynthetic activity in hopes of maybe relating photosynthetic activity parameters to maybe expected yields or something. And then in the laboratory, we took the meal, and we looked at the nutrients that were present, like calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium. We looked at the meal protein because on the market, you'll note that soybean meal commands a higher price because it's got more protein in it. So if we can identify different varieties that produce a higher protein meal, then presumably you can get a better price for those as well. And then we also looked at things like meal ADF and NDF, which are basically, they more relate to the digestibility of this for forage animals. It's usually used more for grassy type forages, so I'm not really going to get into it a whole lot in this presentation. And then lastly, we looked at the percent meal. So basically, if we know, you know, how much seed we're pressing, then we can figure out, okay, what proportion of that initial weight is coming as oil, and how much of that is the meal component. So the overall results, this is from the first planting date for all 40 varieties. You can see there was quite a difference in the varieties as far as the yield was concerned. So basically, to start off with, what we did was we just selected the top five highest yield varieties. And then you can see those here, the ones that we chose. Basically, they're not significantly different among each other. They range from about 1,800 to 2,200 pounds per acre. And so we took those five high yielding varieties and looked at the different qualities of meal and things like that. With the photosynthetic activity, the seed moisture, and then also the winter loss, we didn't really see any significant differences among those five, but we did see some differences among the nutrients that were present in the meal itself. For calcium and for phosphorus, we did not see any significant differences, but for the others, magnesium, potassium, and sulfur, we did. And so basically, just kind of looking at it, you can see maybe that number 12 variety, you know, seems to have better nutrient content compared to the others. Then if we look at protein, we also saw a significant difference in the meal protein that was present in these five varieties. Basically, you know, once again, you can see if we were to look, maybe number 12 and number 21 and 40 all had higher relative protein contents or protein percentages. And so those presumably might be better to use when we're talking about using it as a meal for animal feed. Okay, so then what we can also do is basically identify what sort of revenue we might expect to get from this meal component when we look at the protein content, and then we also look at the amount of meal that we're going to produce for every gallon of biodiesel that we produce. And so basically, the revenue is on the right-hand side. The y-axis on the right-hand side represents dollars per gallon, and those white bars that you see is that revenue. And it's a direct relationship from the protein that we got and then also that percent meal factor that we were also looking at. And so you can see the main driving force here is going to be that percent meal. There's a lot more variation between those five varieties for percent meal than there is for protein. When we look at the revenue, we've got a pretty good range, anywhere from $1.40 all the way up to $2.12. So it ends up being a spread of about 75 cents per gallon of biodiesel. And so that's a pretty big spread when you're trying to optimize, you know, being able to make this have economic feasibility for the farmer. And so looking at these, you know, number 2, 12, number 2, number 12, and number 40 all seemed to be better when it came to producing revenue, producing higher revenue, as compared to the other two varieties that we were looking at. Okay, so we're just getting into comparing some of the different planting dates. So I mentioned that we looked at three different planting dates. The first planting date, the highest yielders are those top five that I talked about. If you look at the second planting date, the top five varieties were a little bit different. There was number 12 and number 16 were still there from the original first planting date. And then if we look at the third planting date, they're totally different. So for the third planting date, what that might indicate is that these five maybe have more cold tolerance since they were planted probably about a month after a month after the first planting date. So obviously that time period, they're getting closer to that killing frost period. And so, you know, some of the top performers from before may not be as cold tolerant as some of the others. So that's some information that we have to look at a little bit more in detail. The moisture, basically that was just a function of the humidity and when we harvested based upon when it had last rained. The winter loss is important too. The first planting date, there was a much lower range of winter loss than for the second planting date. And like I said before, you know, that's getting closer to the killing frost period. So there's less of a chance that some of these plants are going to be able to overwinter as well as that first planting date. I already discussed the meal and the protein for the first planting date. And so we're going to look at both of those values for the second and third planting dates. And then lastly, we're going to look a little bit at the oil quality itself and relate that to biodiesel production as well. So things like free fatty acids are going to be important as far as the amount of chemicals that are going to have to be used in the overall biodiesel conversion process. And then the viscosity of the oil that comes out, that's also going to be important. Just as an aside, we've got a producer in Tennessee right now who actually just takes the straight vegetable oil and uses it and mixes it with about 50% regular diesel and uses it in his tractor. So the viscosity of the oil is definitely going to be an important factor to look at as well. So in conclusion, obviously the yield is the biggest component. There's the greatest amount of variability that's present with the yield. But other than yield, the concentration of the meal is going to be the second most important factor, followed by the protein content. And we're still going to look at, you know, other varieties to see what sort of relationships that we have. The yields are definitely going to vary between different planting dates. And so that's something that we're going to have to keep in mind as we compare different varieties and then also make recommendations to farmers based upon what we saw. And then lastly, the analysis for the oil quality will give us additional information from which we can identify, you know, the certain types of varieties that are going to be best for biodiesel production. And in a lot of cases, these different quality factors are also going to be beneficial for, you know, producing oil for cooking oil or anything like that. I mean, if there's a large crushing facility and they're producing meal, obviously something with a higher protein content is going to be better for them as well. So to finish up, I just want to acknowledge, obviously I mentioned that we had gotten some USDA funding for part of the project, and then also the research assistants and graduate students that have been a part of the project and working on collecting some of the data that I've shown up here today. So with that, I'd like to open it up to any questions or comments related to the presentation. I think once they you know were able to see the equipment and understand, you know, kind of the process, that, you know, one of the things they didn't really understand the process to begin with. They didn't know if it was something that was feasible for them to do. And so once they got, you know, past that point, then the cost really was the biggest issue that they wanted to identify, you know, how much it was going to be so that they could determine whether it was going to be something that they wanted to participate in.
So how were any of the growers that you talked with going to use the canola meal themselves for cattle or anything?
I'm not sure. So what we were doing were some workshops, and we didn't really ask about the meal component as far as if they were, you know, if they were going to do it, if they planned on, you know, the participants in the workshops, I don't think were quite to that point yet where they were considering that part of it. You know, the producer that I mentioned that we have in Tennessee, he's using the meal to feed to his cattle. And so then he's using, really the oil is the byproduct for him because he's growing it specifically for a protein source. Well, for canola, it's where we are in Tennessee, we can use it as a winter crop. And so that's really important because not only is it going to be a cover crop, but it's a cover crop that you can get a commodity from. You can rotate it with winter wheat. Other oilseed crops are going to be soybean, sunflower, and those are more, you know, those are annual summer crops. So they're a little bit different as far as, you know, those kinds of characteristics are concerned. Yeah. Usually, I mean, we haven't done it, but usually there's enough time to put in some soybean afterwards, and that's why it works well in rotation with things like that, and that's why it can be rotated with winter wheat as well. We've got a number of farmers in Tennessee that grow winter wheat, and they rotate it with soybean, and then obviously you can use winter canola as a rotational crop with the winter wheat to, you know, reduce any sort of disease or weed competition.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is there enough, do you have enough growing season, enough moisture mm-hmm. to double crop?
Yes.
And you do?
Yes.
Okay, so we better move on.
Thanks, Jason. Yep.